magical place for kids and grown-ups alike, where fantasy and fun come to life. Fazbear Entertainment is not responsible for damage to property or person.
Welcome to Now Playing Podcast's Five Nights at Freddy's Movie Review.
Welcome to Freddy Fazbear's Pizzeria, where fantasy and fun come to life.
Part of Now Playing's video game movie review series.
Let's introduce you to the stars of the show.
Hosted by Arnie.
Why do I always get the weirdos?
Justin.
Well, he's kind of a sentimental guy, I guess.
And Stuart.
Well, that good-looking guy I recognize. Who are all these other punks?
This episode will contain detailed plot spoilers and strong language.
Chica, I don't like this.
Listener discretion is advised.
Be quick, but thorough.
Today we're discussing Five Nights at Freddy's, starring Josh Hutcherson, Elizabeth Lail, Piper Rubio, with Mary Stuart Masterson and Matthew Lillard, directed by Emma Tammy. This is the Now Playing co-host who hears the secrets that you keep when you're talking in your sleep, Arnie.
And Stuart.
And this is the co-host who doesn't have to dream about being in Nebraska. I live the dream. This is Justin.
Wow, yeah. Lucky you. You can tell us all about it and this whole video game phenomenon. Because I gotta say, until a few years ago, I had never heard of Five Nights at Freddy's. But it's huge.
I feel so out of it, but, you know, I have the toy podcasts, Star Wars Action News and Marvelicious Toys, and I go to Toy Fair, and I go to Comic-Con, and I cover Funko with all of their pops and everything, the pop vinyls, and everywhere I'd go, I would see Five Nights at Freddy's stuff, and I'd be like, is this an anime? Is this a cartoon on Cartoon Network with Adventure Time? What is Five Nights at Freddy's? I had no clue it was a video game, but I knew it was something being mass merchandised.
That was my entry into it too, Arnie, is seeing all these figures on the shelves every time you go look. It's like, oh, there's this creepy looking teddy bear and a duck and a bunny. And it's like, what is this? And both of my kids are into the game, but guess what? I didn't know what they were talking about because they call it FNAF, right? They use the acronym Five Nights at Freddy's. So they've been talking about it for years, and I had no idea that was the same thing as these crazy-looking action figures.
I only found out about this when they made a Banana Splits movie. Do you guys remember the Banana Splits? I mean, they were even predating my youth, but in the early 70s, Hanna-Barbera had like this furry rock band. And then 4 years ago, I blew my lid because I was like, they're bringing them back as horror characters. Like, they made a slasher movie with the Banana Splits picking up axes and killing children. And I was like, this is great. Can you imagine like Bozo starring in the John Wayne Gacy story or Barney like taking a saw to a child as he sings, I love you. I mean, I'm like, who would have ever come up with this concept? And every time I brought that up to someone, they're like, oh, that sounds like a Five Nights at Freddy's ripoff. And it is.
Well, you do know there's the Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. Now that Winnie the Pooh is public domain, somebody did that horror film.
Yeah, that came out this year, and I guess there's going to be sequels to that as well. So, again, this is very exciting, and I guess what the kids are into these days. The characters that comforted us are their slasher heroes.
And these characters did comfort me. I remember growing up, you know, in the 80s, loving arcades. And every single week, I would force my godparents to take me to either Chuck E. Cheese or Showbiz Pizza Place. Now, I preferred Showbiz Pizza Place because even as a kid, a giant rat with my pizza did not appeal to me. I preferred the big gorilla at Showbiz versus the big rat at Chuck E. Cheese. I don't know whose idea it was to sell pizza with a rat, but that is not appealing.
So you guys grew up in a place that had the option, huh? We only had Showbiz around here until later on.
Not only that, yes. In the 80s, I went to many a birthday party at both establishments. But when I turned 16 and needed to find work, my parents weren't going to give me any extra money. One of my first jobs was, quote, dining room attendant at a time when Showbiz and Chuck E. Cheese were coming together. So it was called Showbiz Pizza. They had the Rockafire explosion on the stage, but I had to put on the Chuck E. Cheese outfit to go dance around with the kids.
Wait. You dressed as the rat? I never knew this. You put on the mascot head and you went out and danced?
Well, you had to, because like if somebody didn't show up for work, I got news for you. The people working at Showbiz Pizza, not reliable in lots of ways. So yeah, somebody flakes and now you're in the suit. I didn't do it much because it's not my bag, right? But yeah, it's painful because the kids, of course, they beat up on you. And if they grab your nose and hang on your nose, it's actually cutting into your face. I had welts on my face because kids thought it was funny to pull Chucky's nose. Oh, I could tell you a lot of stories. It is a horror movie scenario for sure. So much drug dealing, sexual exploitation, creepy things happening at that place. I didn't need to play a video game to be excited when I heard about this concept. I couldn't wait to dive into Five Nights at Freddy's.
And I'm sorry, we can't brush by this too quickly. I mean, this is now playing history. We just found out that Stuart's backstory includes cosplaying as Chuck E. Cheese. That's huge.
Yeah, you know, it was something. I mean, again, I made a lot of cool friends there. What I can say is what kept me there for the 6 months was not the pizza and the benefits. It was because I wasn't really popular in high school, and these were actually the people I liked hanging out with. So I had some really cool friends. We had fun living in the depravity. When you're 16, you don't always pick up on all the cues of what's wrong around you. First job, I should have been aware of things going on that I wasn't. It's actually a pretty seedy place, but I have mixed feelings. And I think Freddy draws on that, that like it's both cute and disturbing to have an animatronic family restaurant.
Now, I didn't know this game, but I did decide since we were reviewing this movie, I should look into the games, look into the lore. What I did find out is this game was a small independent game. And if you've played the first one, you can feel it. I mean, it feels like the type of thing that I would have programmed. I'm not obviously a multi-billionaire who has a franchise, so I didn't have anything this clever, but the rudimentary nature of the game and such. It turns out that this franchise is popular because of YouTube. YouTubers took this game and really elevated it to a platform that its developer never would have had on its own. It took several years for this to really catch on. I played the first game. I did not survive Five Nights at Freddy's, nor did I have the tenacity to come back. The game is simplicity itself. You are sitting in a security office at Freddy Fazbear's Pizzeria, and for reasons, you have a very limited amount of power. And so you can only use things like the security cameras so much, because if you run out of power, then you can't defend yourself. And you never leave this room. You never go out exploring. You never fight the monsters.
Okay, yes. I looked at a walkthrough and I was very confused. It just looked like channel flipping between all the security cameras. It was actually giving me a headache.
Yeah, what you do is you use the security cameras to watch where the animatronics go. And when they get near you, you have to close either the right door or the left door. But keeping the door closed uses more power, so you can't just shut the doors and pass the evening. And you have to go from midnight till 6 a.m., without the monsters getting in the room. And there's lights outside the door you can use. And I'll give you this. The first time I played it, when the monster got in the room, it is a hell of a jump scare. I literally jumped at the loud noise and the in-your-face animatronic monster. It was very funny and very frightening. And I got immediately where the appeal would be. But the appeal to me is not in the gameplay. This was a really boring game of tedium and squinting at security camera footage that is intentionally obscured so that I'm like, is that an animatronic or is that just a shadow?
Yeah, it looked more like Paranormal Activity, the game, than I was thinking something like Super Mario Brothers. I thought it would be like 8-bit characters that are cute and dancing around and then pull out an axe and you have to run from that. But there is no bloodletting. It's not a bloody game.
The first one is not. I mean, if there's blood, it's off screen and it's you. Because you're told Matthew Lillard is playing basically what they call answering machine guy. Each night, there's a guy who used to be the security guard leaving you an answering machine message, giving you some tips. And what it says is that the animatronics are allowed to roam free at night, but if they see you, they won't recognize you as a human. They're going to think you're an exoskeleton outside of the suit. And so they're going to shove you into a suit, which, because of the gears and everything inside of the suit, means you're going to become a bloody pulp.
Can I just speak up to this? Because I did wear the suit. The ones on stage with the robotics are not what you wear. Like, that was very bizarre to me. They tried to say that you would wear the same thing that has all these gears and sharp things in it. I mean, no, that's not how it works.
But it is how it works with more advanced puppetry. I mean, if you see some of the more advanced people in suits, the heads are robotic, the eyes move, the eyes blink, things like that. Yes, in the 1980s, I don't think we had that, but they're out there, I think mostly at theme parks more than at restaurants. But yeah, that was the whole concept, is the animatronics wanted to make you one of them. Now, as I understand it, Part 3 has a lot of mini-games and creates a backstory. In Part 3, you're not even at the pizzeria, you're in a bedroom, and you're trying to keep the monsters from coming into the bedroom instead of coming into the security guard office. But there's mini-games you can play, and I might have gotten confused. That might be Part 4. If somebody wants to correct me on the Facebook page, I'll take that hit. But there are the mini-games in Part 3 that give you the backstory of dead children and why these animatronics came to life. And a lot of this is retcon. The programmer made a small game. It became a big franchise hit. He immediately moved on to the sequels. And then he was able to come up with backstory that was not in the first one. Why are the animatronics alive? Why are the animatronics homicidal? This came later.
Yeah, and not just in video games. Because I'm a bigger reader than I am a gamer, I went and found out the best-selling trilogy that, yeah, the game programmer, his name's Scott Cawthorn, his name is also on this screenplay. His name is on everything Five Nights at Freddy's. It's become his whole life to just mass market this thing. And there are so many comics and books, but there was a trilogy of bestsellers. I went and read that he co-authored, that was meant to explain the backstory. But from what I hear from fans, actually conflicts with things that are in various games. And actually, if you're a stickler about continuity, you might get really angry. But in this trilogy, it followed the daughter of the man that invented the animatronic characters. And her twin brother, I guess it was, disappeared at the restaurant. The restaurant was known for child kidnappings, I guess. Is that something that came up in the game?
Yeah, it came up in the mini games later on, is that there were kidnappings. They didn't know if they were murders because the bodies were never found, but there were missing children. And yes, I did watch this entire YouTube video that was very helpful on the mythology of it. And it got into how one of the creators was making homicidal robots and tried to keep his own three children away from it, but not very successfully, and one of the children was killed by the animatronic.
Yeah, although it was two different characters in the book, that the Atherton character is somebody different from the animatronics expert. Long story short, the first book is about them going back 10 years later to look for clues in the rundown restaurant. The second book has the animatronics getting out into the real world, going into bedrooms. Sounds like that third game you described, Arnie. And then the conclusion is that one of the animatronics is able to make a facsimile of their main character. And so there's a robot daughter going around, meeting up with her friends and trying to kill them. The surprise is, and maybe this will be my review for everything Five Nights at Freddy's, it's actually very slow moving. Nothing really happens. And it is surprisingly light on campiness and comedy. You told me that Chuck E. Cheese is trying to kill me. I'm thinking Chucky. I'm thinking Chopping Mall. I'm thinking this is a funny horror comedy. And it's not there. It's not there in those books. And it didn't look like it was there in those games.
No, I think the comedy comes from the irony that these are somewhat cute characters. One looks kind of like Crash Bandicoot, the fox one. And Chica is a cute little chicken and you've got cute things killing you. There's irony in that, but it's not played for laughs at all. This is a straight up horror game.
Right. That was a surprise. That knocked me off my feet to think that nobody saw this as being funny.
I think what we're all kind of saying here is this is really a product of the times, right? Like, we have a creator who kind of stumbled into something that really resonated with millennials and Gen Zers. I think based on the aesthetic, you know, they kind of like the idea of these creepy old animatronics. And from there, it just kind of blossomed. The creator didn't know where to go with it for sure. And I think communities popped up and they kind of started creating their own lore. And it's all just kind of this big stew of a story and background and stuff branching off of it that everybody has kind of contributed to.
And yet, Scott Cawthorn legitimizes, like, he puts his name on everything and is creatively involved with everything. If I didn't know where to take something, I might sell it to somebody that knows what to do, right? I might say, all right, Hollywood, go make the movie. But he spent many years, this thing was in development for many years. They wanted to make this movie since 2015. And it always seems like Scott was the one saying, not good enough, we're not making that movie. Pulling it out of the hands of Home Alone director Chris Columbus, of all people.
And it's rumored that one of those scripts that was rejected became the Banana Splits movie.
Ah, I can believe that. Maybe he just saw pixels. I don't know. Maybe Chris Columbus didn't write a good script, but it just seems like there is a crisis about what is a good story for this creation. And it sounds like it means different things to different people. I don't know. Emma Tammy is not a name that is on the lips of most people. How she wound up co-writing and directing this movie, a bit of a surprise. Kind of maybe just a random bit of luck that it ends up falling on her in 2023.
And I think Blumhouse may have something to do with that. I don't know Emma Tammy at all, but Blumhouse, I know they crank out horror films and find inexpensive up-and-comers.
Thrifty, yes. Blumhouse used to pride itself on never making a movie over $3 million.
This one was 20, so they spent some money to try to develop a franchise, and the box office has me blown away. I can't believe it, but they're really earning their money back. It is estimated to get nearly $80 million this weekend, and that's domestic numbers. Now, I watched this movie at home on Peacock. I mean, I don't know why you'd go to the theater for this, but I did. I didn't realize it was on Peacock originally. I don't think they did a very good job of advertising that. I saw the trailers for this in theaters, and so I thought it was a theatrical film.
I don't think they do a very good job of advertising Peacock, Arnie. I don't think people know what that is.
Yeah, it's the NBC streaming service. But I did look at going to see this in theaters, and it was nearly sold out on Thursday night. That's why I ended up going with Peacock, as A, I can take my notes digitally. I always prefer that versus having to write scribbled in the dark. But also, there was not a seat available where I would not have been picking a chair next to a stranger, which is always a little bit uncomfortable, especially still post-COVID. It's a little weird to just go elbow to elbow with somebody you don't know. So, yeah, it was definitely going to be a popular theatrical experience if you had one.
I went Friday night and looked at several showtimes, and this is one of those movies that surprisingly had a lot of staggered times. There was an 8, an 8:15, an 8:45, a 9:15. I mean, they were in multiple theaters on this, and I had a hard time finding two seats together. But my daughter wanted to see it in the theater. I told her it's on Peacock. We can sit at home and watch it on the couch. She wanted to go. She was pretty sure that it was going to be, you know, kind of an experience, maybe a Rocky Horror type of thing. People dressing up. She even kind of cosplayed a little bit, which is crazy, because I can't usually get her to go to the theater with me. But she would rather have gone and sat in the theater for this movie than stay home and watch it.
How did she cosplay? I'm curious about that.
She did want to find a costume, but come on, late Friday night, opening night, they're all gone. So she actually did a pretty good job. She found a little top hat and she put her hair in buns to look like bear ears. She wore a brown hoodie, so it was more of an homage than a cosplay, but it was cute.
Yeah, I wanted to do it both ways. I figured I would go and have a private screening. I went the very first show on Thursday, which was 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Nobody's going to be there, right? But I'd say it was about a quarter filled, and I was talking to folks. Some said they took off from work. They were all adults. I want to say no kids in this thing, even though this is PG-13. I guess kids were still in school. And then there were a lot of, I would say, adult people caring for maybe special needs adult children that they had. And I actually sat in front of a couple like that, and the guy was just super enthusiastic. As soon as the credits came on, he was screaming and shouting the names of the characters, and it really, I was grateful to have that experience, because it really told me what a fan, a super fan, was going to think of this production. And then I had a lot of questions. I'll just go ahead and put it. After this movie, I was like, I don't understand anything that I just saw. So I went home to Peacock to try and make sense of it.
So you spent 10 nights at Freddy's.
Yeah. I don't think if I spent the rest of my life at Freddy's, I would be able to do this plot summary, Arnie. You try.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Josh Hutcherson plays Mike Schmidt, an unemployed young adult who is the caretaker of his much younger sister, Abby, played by Piper Rubio. His custody of Abby is threatened by their Aunt Jane, played by Mary Stuart Masterson. To prove to the courts he's a good guardian, Mike needs to get a job quickly. He visits his career counselor, Steve, played by Matthew Lillard, and there's only one job available, night watchman of the closed-down Freddy Fazbear's Pizzeria. Mike reluctantly takes the job. Freddy's is an old pizza party arcade and has several animatronic mascots, specifically the titular Freddy Fazbear, Chica, Foxy, and Bonnie. These are all now in various states of disrepair from the years that have passed. While on the job, Mike befriends local police officer Vanessa Shelley, played by Elizabeth Lale. Vanessa tells Mike about Freddy's history, that the restaurant closed in the 1980s after 5 children went missing at Freddy's. Their bodies were never found. While Mike is getting back on his feet with this new job, Aunt Jane is becoming impatient with the custody hearing. She hires a couple of vandals to wreck Freddy's, presumably getting Mike fired. But when the vandals go to wreck the restaurant, the animatronics come to life and murder the criminals. One of the vandals was Abby's babysitter, and this forces Mike to bring Abby to work the next night. Abby is supposed to stay asleep in the office, but she sneaks out and befriends the animatronic gang. They play together. Abby tells Mike the mascots are possessed by the ghosts of the missing children. Vanessa warns Mike of the dangers of Freddy's, so Mike reluctantly gets Aunt Jane to babysit Abby while Mike goes to work. But another animatronic Freddy, Golden Freddy, goes to Abby's house, kills Jane, and takes Abby back to the restaurant. The animatronics want Abby to become one of them by killing her and stuffing her body in one of the mascots. Vanessa then gives the rest of the backstory. William Afton was a serial killer who killed the 5 children in the 1980s. He shoved their bodies in the animatronics at Freddy's, which is why the bodies were never found. Vanessa is Afton's daughter and knows this history, and knows that tasers and electricity can disable the mascots. Mike goes to save Abby from Freddy and company, and disables all the mascots, but then a man in a yellow bunny suit attacks. In the suit is William Afton, played by Matthew Lillard. Yes, I said Matthew Lillard played Steve earlier. By day, William went by the name of Steve and worked as a career counselor, and at night, William is a serial killer who stabs his daughter Vanessa and gets ready to kill Mike. But Abby tells the mascots that William is the one who murdered them as children. Freddy and his compatriots gang up and kill William. Vanessa is taken to the hospital where she is in a coma, and Mike and Abby leave the hospital as credits roll. And as credits start, we have this 8-bit representation of the backstory of Freddy's, and this looks just like the mini games that you play in part 3. This kind of graphical style that tells the backstory of Freddy's and the kidnappings and all of that. This feels almost like a lift straight out of that game.
Yeah, it's more that lore. Like they're going back and building the lore, right? Like they're pretending like there was a game in the 80s that was based on the Freddy's characters.
Yeah, and what it's telling you is that there's a man that puts on a yellow bunny suit and he goes and grabs kids while they're playing skee ball, while they're watching the animatronic show, while they want a balloon, that all of these kidnappings happened at the restaurant. So it'll be really confusing to me when he takes a vacation and gets a black car and goes and steals Garrett.
Yeah, Garrett, we'll talk about, was Mike's younger brother. I skipped over the entire child abduction bit in the plot summary because it's, we'll go into it.
Good job on trying, Arnie, but I still have so many questions. The who, why, what, where, how never stops. From the word jump, as we begin in this movie, there is some random security guard trying to escape or something. Who this is, why it's important. It feels like a cutscene from a Saw movie.
It looked like a Saw film with the mask.
Nothing to do with the rest of the film. He gets strapped, yeah, to a dentist chair and a Freddy mask. It's like he's going to be turned into Freddy, but the gears are going to cut off his face while they do it or something.
So maybe we can start off with what should be an easy question and establish a timeline here. Like, what is this, the 90s?
Okay, this I can do. And it was thanks to Peacock and some crafty freeze frame. All right, so I heard in the theme song, and this is the, I guess, the fan behind me got super excited when they played it at the end. So I'm assuming it's from some of the games.
It's from part two.
Okay. The Living Tombstones wrote this song that said all of these murder disappearances happened in 1987. And Josh will say on his camping trip that he's about 12 years old. There is one piece of footage where he's waiting to see his career counselor, and he's on videotape. The date on the counter is April 4th in the year 2000. So he's 25 years old, and this movie is happening in 2000.
Oh my God, thank you, because I had so many problems, because Vanessa talks about growing up in the 80s and how she used to hang out at Freddy's, and I'm like, she is not 50. I thought this movie was taking place now. I did look her up. She's 31 years old, so I guess she could play older, but not that old. But I was having real problems with the ages of the characters and the fact that this was happening in the 80s.
I'm wondering if some technician didn't just go and put that little graphic date in there just to help with that when they realized that this movie made no sense. Yeah, the fact that people are going to be at a shopping mall in such big numbers, it had to be 20 years ago, right?
Yeah, so, okay, good. We have that established. And I know, I mean, this is just a preference in writing, I guess, but like, his little sister, should that have been his niece or his daughter or something like that?
His daughter!
Age difference is crazy.
What is this with my sister? Yeah, so I tried to figure this one out. Our main character, who is, I guess, the main character in most or all of the video games?
Some of the games, not all of the games. And the main character is you. You know, you're the one playing. But if you survive the Five Nights at Freddy's, you get a paycheck that's made out to Mike Schmidt.
Yeah, I laughed at that because I saw that in the watch. Like, you get paid like $125 for surviving the night at Freddy's. But yes, so Mike is a beloved character, if there is such a thing. And so people want to see this guy. So he is 12 years old when his younger brother is abducted. The mom would have to be pregnant with Abby, right? Like, Abby is about 13 years old then?
Yeah, 11, 12-ish in that area.
See, I took Abby as the replacement child. You know, sometimes you lose a child and you decide to have another one. So I figured that after Garrett, the brother, went disappearing, that they decided to have a new child, and that was Abby.
Yeah, usually when you lose a child, you're talking about a child dying, but that they literally lose him, that he literally, it's this weird camp scene that we see repeatedly in Dream, that this family, the Schmidt family, was camping in Nebraska, and the older brother was asked to go play Frisbee with the younger one while the parents did whatever, right?
Cleaned up spilled soda.
Yeah, they spilled soda and then they're like gone in the tent. I feel like they're, you know, having afternoon delight or something.
Yeah, they're out there making Abby.
Yeah, so they're making Abby. There you go.
That's going to be my new euphemism for that from now on.
And so he sees this car pull away with his brother holding a toy airplane and believes from that moment on that he can identify the person that did that. 13 years later, he's studying lucid dreaming. I don't know if you guys know about this phenomenon, but there's a belief that you can actually control what happens to you in a dream, very Dream Warriors-like, Elm Street, that he is going to control that dream and eventually be able to peek at who's behind the driving wheel of that car. And so Abby, yes, that she is this daughter from a family that now can't support her. The mom died, is what I heard. And the dad, quote, couldn't handle it. And now an aunt, who is related to who I don't know, wants to take the custody of Abby.
And not for altruistic reasons. I mean, it's stated that she's basically just after the state check that she would get for being a guardian.
which is very weird because Guardians are notoriously underpaid. The checks you get don't pay for the children. And this Aunt Jane seems to be doing quite well. She's got a high-powered attorney on her side. She's able to spend thousands to bribe people to undermine Mike. So I don't know why she would need this money or want this money.
And it's a goofy kind of family setup for something that actually, again, when we see it in Dream, it actually plays really dark and creepy. I don't think we're ever supposed to think of this as funny, but when we cut to her, she's the comedic relief. Whatever happens to Abby, we don't want her to go to evil Aunt Jane.
And Abby has some emotional problems of her own. We're going to see Mike talking with the teacher. Abby is withdrawn, and she spends her time drawing pictures and not engaging with people, not really talking with people, not even talking with Mike, who's her caretaker.
She has imaginary friends, which I had imaginary friends when I was 6 or 7. She seems a bit old for it. If she, in fact, was given birth to by the end of the 80s, then yeah, she would have outgrown imaginary friends, developmentally speaking.
So this, to me, is where I begin to start having problems with the narrative of this movie, right? Because up till now, I think we're supposed to believe the big trauma that is driving Mike is not being able to save his brother back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're skipping over things that are more relevant now and more traumatizing now and minimizing them. Abby is a child who has lost both of her parents, yet we're still supposed to feel bad for Mike for losing his brother 13 years ago. It's just incongruent with what we should be paying attention to here.
Yeah, it seems like it would be so much cleaner if he was the dad of a child now and overprotective, and she's socially awkward because of that. Instead of Aunt Jane, we have a wife or an ex-wife that wants custody.
I thought the exact same thing, that would be such an easy change to the game, because Mike never had a sister that we know of in the games.
The reason why they do it is Mike believes that he had a perfect family life until that camping trip, and then his perfect family was destroyed in one fell swoop by Garrett being taken away. All that's left of that family is Abby at this point. So as long as he has Abby, he has a tie back to a perfect life, is the best I can give this movie. But yeah, it's just messy. It's super messy. And he's so traumatized that even though he's putting on a suit and tie to go to work, he's just a mall security guard who, like, he sees one kid get grabbed and believes that it's an abduction and is beating up on a dad in the mall fountain.
Yeah, I rewound and watched this a second time. I didn't catch exactly why he just went berserk on this guy. But yeah, it is apparent that he thinks he's stopping a kidnapping and he has that emotional trauma from Garrett. And yeah, you're a mall smokey. You don't get to do this. You're not a real cop. You don't get to beat up people and tase them and do all this and keep your job.
So this is what I was saying about where we established the timeline. He goes to Steve Raglan to try and find another job. And we have Matthew Lillard, who I guess they got because of Scooby-Doo. This is kind of a Scooby-Doo plot here. The career counselor you wouldn't suspect is the one behind it all. We should guess it because he's sitting at the desk?
Well, first of all, I think Matthew Lillard is having a bit of a career resurgence. I mean, we did talk about him in the Twin Peaks season 3. He was just announced as one of the stars of the upcoming Stephen King movie, The Life of Chuck.
Okay. I keep waiting for him in Scream 8.
Yeah, I mean, they brought back Skeet Ulrich. He's probably next.
That's the other thing. We'll get to it. There's a major Easter egg here. I think he was hired because he was the masked killer in Scream. He's the masked killer in this.
But here he's just kind of playing an office doofus. The way it comes across here, again, tonally speaking, we're all over the place. Of like, this is just kind of goofy office comedy. And then he reads the guy's name. When he finally realizes who this Mike guy is, suddenly he's got a job for him. Up until that point, he's ridiculing him. But when he realizes, oh, I kidnapped your brother 13 years ago, he's targeting Mike specifically. That's why he's giving him Freddy's, which he owns.
Which would have been, I think, a better plan had they not inserted the other security guard getting murdered earlier. Like, because this place doesn't need security.
Right!
This should have been a made-up job for him to trap him.
That's how it plays when you ignore the opening scene, yes.
I think you needed an opening kill because it's going to be 40 minutes in this movie before we get to killer animatronics.
Oh my God. Who made that choice? I actually know, because I did go back and look at some of Emma Tammy's work, and she's elevated horror. All of her pieces. She did 2 episodes of Into the Dark, which is a Hulu anthology horror show where every month they release a movie that's themed for the holiday of that month. And she did a Mother's Day one. It was a straight-up drama about a single woman trying to raise a kid and fearful that her abusive husband, who just happens to be a werewolf, is going to find them. And yeah, just 40 minutes pass before anyone grows fangs or there's a full moon or anything. She just loves leisurely paces and just haunting stories about child abuse. I feel like she just wants to make a story about child abduction. To her, that's the horror of this. She has no agenda for making a slasher. Does that honor the game?
The game is suspense. That's the whole thing. The monsters are coming to get you. You've got to close the door. The moment of Laurie Strode hiding in the closet as Michael Myers is banging that door down, that's the mood of the game. You can't say it's necessarily a slasher because the only person to die is you if you lose the game. So it's not like they're going around murdering all kinds of people. It's not like that old Texas Chainsaw Atari 2600 game where you are Leatherface and you're mowing people down.
This is what I'm imagining in my head, though. This is what I'm thinking the game should be. And I can tell you, the big fan behind me is super excited. Like, all it took was, like, the silhouette of Foxy for him just to be jumping up and down and being like, ooh, I guess Foxy hummed some song and he was just barely could stay in his seat. He was so excited.
But yes, as you mentioned, Justin, I don't understand the entire concept of the game in that this rundown pizzeria needs a nighttime security guard.
And again, what's the plan on Mike? Does he know that he has Abby? Is he like, oh good, you have a sister I can abduct? Because he doesn't actually target Mike. Here's the really crazy part. None of the animatronics that have abducted children in them has Garrett. We'll never know where Garrett actually went.
Yeah, so much of this feels like they shot for a few days, edited, and then they came back and they're like, where were we? Yeah, let's just start over and change tones and themes.
Now, I should know more about Five Nights at Freddy's than I do, but there's 4 animatronics in this movie, right? I named them.
5.
There's 5?
Well, here's what, with the help of the fan behind me afterwards, we were like, why are there 5 kids and 4 animatronics?
Yes, I was just getting there. Yeah, that's my question.
The cupcake. The little girl, you will see in some of the drawings, she has a bib with a cupcake on it.
Okay, so the cupcake was its own animatronic.
Yes.
Okay, that I did not get. I thought that was just like a weapon of one of them.
And for a lot of the movie, I thought that the little blonde girl that we kept seeing in the dreams was Vanessa, grown up.
Right? You could have gone that way. Again, what is her role here? Because we'll find out that, yeah, she was alive during all of this. Just table all of that. Let's go sequentially through this very dull 40 minutes to a kill. I agree. It's a really long haul. I guess it has some atmosphere, but I was so confused as to why we were going so slowly and so ponderously through this setup that he ends up, there's 5 nights. So let's count out what happens each night. Night 1 is just about getting orientated to the job. He plays a VHS of the security, how to do your job. I'll say this to compliment the movie. The details are right. Having worked at Showbiz and having just seen the behind the scenes, they got the posters, the look. I know they brought in Jim Henson to design the animatronics. I think this looks like a good movie.
Jim Henson Studios. Jim Henson himself is not shoved into one of these animatronics.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. Let me clarify. Jim left us after Turtles 1.
Yeah. I mean, it's what I keep going back to here. And I think it's what the major draw of this franchise is to this younger generation is the aesthetic.
It's great. Yeah. It's so seductive. It really took me back. It felt so real and had me so excited. I was forgiving of the slow pace for a while because I just enjoyed taking in the art direction.
And if you are eagle-eyed, apparently there is an employee of the month wall, and a lot of the YouTubers that champion this game are employees of the month. So if you're a big fan of Razbowski or Fusion Z Gamer, they were employees of the month.
Anyway, night one, the point is, after he learns the job and peeks behind the curtain, and we've set up where he's at, and I'm thoroughly enchanted, he goes to sleep on the job. He is not going to give up on his routine. He believes he needs to keep this regular. He can't change the hours of his REM cycle. And so he goes into that Nebraska camping trip, and it changes. Suddenly there are five kids there. Five kids will learn that were abducted from this restaurant, and they will be ghosts trying to tempt him into giving up Abby as the five nights progress.
Now, Stuart, you'd read the books. I watched walkthroughs and things. Justin, did you know these were going to be ghost children that are possessing the animatronics? Because I guessed that from my knowledge of the lore as soon as I saw those kids.
No. The second time we see the kids, I think I'm starting to put it together. It's like, okay, this is where they're going. But yeah, I had no idea of the lore from the games or the books or anything. So I wasn't sure where they were going. But I think by time we go to the dream the second time and the way they're standing there, the way they're dressed, it's like, okay. These guys are at least analogous to the creatures we're seeing in real life.
Yeah, there's definitely one dude wearing blue bunny ears, and I think that helps. You might not notice that right away. The books are confusing because sometimes they are just killer robots, and they're working at the behest of the Atherton character. So that they're actually possessed by victims, and we're to feel bad for them. That they're actually luring Abby because they're lonely and trapped in this restaurant. Again, where does that leave Garrett? I just want to point out, for me, if the hook is Mike's trying to find Garrett, this is not in any way helpful for him. But they promised to tell him who took Garrett as the nights progress.
Yeah, it almost would have been more satisfying if we found out that Garrett survived and he's the one that was orchestrating all this.
Yeah, some kind of twist like that.
I mean, we're supposed to assume Garrett is dead and is one of these animatronics, right?
No, he's not one of the kids.
I guess I figured he was appearing as a different looking child as one of the five ghosts.
Well, the story tells us that there was five children abducted from the restaurant in the 80s. That's why the restaurant closed down. So those five are accounted for there. Garrett is just the outliner. He wasn't abducted from the restaurant. He was abducted in Nebraska some time ago by the same guy.
Who never got caught and presumably abducted more children that could be in the sequel as well. So there are so many more children there are animatronics. Is really bad writing. That should not have happened. There should be a one for one.
Well, there's a lot more animatronics that they need to add in too for sequels.
Yeah. But you get my point, right? Probably would have been better just to set this in the 80s while this was happening, or cut back and forth between two timelines. But this whole dream sequence in Nebraska feels like a different movie. And I want to underline, I feel like the director wants to make this somber movie about abduction and getting the animatronics. Seeing what's happening in the restaurant becomes a real afterthought. It's really only when the babysitter, Abby has a babysitter that's actually working with the evil aunt, and they hatch a plan. She, her boyfriend, and two other goons are going to break in during the day so that, I guess, Mike will lose his job because he didn't do a good job securing the place.
Because they're going to destroy this destroyed restaurant. Like, what?
I know. It's weak, but you know what? Don't take this from the movie. It is the only time where I remember the audience talking to the screen and having fun is when these people get killed.
Do we know in this movie, because I didn't get it, that Matthew Lillard's Steve owns this restaurant? Because I took it as he was a job placement guy, and we don't know who owns this. So who's going to be mad that this demolished restaurant is more demolished? Who's the boss in this scenario? I don't know. But yes, we do get this funny lawyer. I do get a chuckle out of Aunt Jane's lawyer. He kind of looks like Danny DeVito as the Penguin in Batman Returns. And he's freaking out because Aunt Jane is planning all these illegal activities. And he's like, I can't be hearing this.
Yeah, they even talk about whacking Mike. And he's like, they have to forcibly hold him down in his seat. I think the person that it matters to, it should just be said, before we can get to these killings, there's another night that passes. On night two, Mike meets Vanessa. The only one that seems to care is this cop that just happens to be patrolling the neighborhood, but I guess no crime is ever happening. She's never called away. She's always hanging out at this rundown Freddy Fazbear's restaurant. And yeah, she will basically get really mad that Mike is falling asleep on the job and not taking care of it the way that she remembers from her childhood.
And I'm really glad you clarified that timeline, because again, when she's saying she was there as a child, and I'm like, wait a second, you're 31. How were you there as a child?
I just like that she's there kind of chastising Mike about, you know, how he's not doing his job properly, yet we never see her being a cop throughout the entire show.
That's what I'm laughing about. Like, she will come to his house after this vandalism thing and like, you need to work harder and stop taking drugs and not fall asleep. And I'm like, how about you go be a cop then? Right? Like, you do no work yourself. But yeah, this whole character, she makes no sense to me. Let's just get to it. She's Atherton's daughter who's supposedly helping him kill Mike or keeping Mike away from the secrets?
No, I think she's against her dad.
He will tell her, you had one job, you were supposed to kill him if he gets too close, and you were supposed to keep him away from the secrets. If you were going to keep him away from the secrets, don't hire him to look at the restaurant.
It's messy and confusing. Like, maybe she has Stockholm Syndrome to some degree, right? Like, she wants to protect her father even though she knows he's bad, but it's not on screen.
Yes. She got things out of it. We will see her playing with the toy airplane that Garrett had, so to her, it was just getting new toys when these children were abducted.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are on the surface here that I think if they would have followed any one of these threads and dug deeper, we would have had a better movie-going experience. But as it is, it's just skimming across the top.
Which is another way of saying there must have been so many different drafts of the script, and we're getting bits and pieces of all of them, and that's why it doesn't make sense. In a different context, so many of these moments would have weight. Together, it's a collective question mark. I don't understand anyone's motivation, what's happening, why. But let's talk about the kills. Because again, that's why I came to this. I thought this was a slasher. There are vandals breaking in. And we're going to see four people picked off very quickly. Starting with Carl.
And this is where it's like, oh yeah, this is PG-13, huh? Because we get very little blood, right? Like there's like a handprint of blood. We see, I think, a beheading, but only in shadow form.
Yes. But you know what? I'm having fun with this. I'll be honest, I haven't enjoyed the movie for the first 40 minutes. I feel like there's a lot of underdeveloped melodrama. But when we start getting here, I'm like, maybe the movie's kicking into gear and this is going to be a lot of fun. Because being stalked by these animatronics, I find it troublesome that they're only killing bad people. They're letting Mike live. But they're going after these vandals. That's a change from the video game where they're going to kill any human they see. But I go with this as, you know, the horror movie of you do bad things, you deserve to die in a horror movie. And so these animatronics start stalking the vandals and it's a lot of fun there. I gotta say, the beheading especially was my favorite kill of the entire movie.
Yeah, fist pumps from the crowds. This is why you want to go to the movie theater and have that communal experience, is a moment like this, you know, which is at home at Peacock, not much more than a shrug, but in the theater, you're getting into it. You're smiling because other people are smiling and you're having a good time. You're starting to see the movie as it should be. Yeah, it's light on blood, but yeah, a guy runs into a broom closet and there's the red eyes behind him of Bonnie the Bunny and... yeah, that she pokes her head. They're playing hide and seek. She's chasing a child. The babysitter is wandering around and pokes her head into the Fazbear suit and gets her head bitten off.
I can't help but think that the movie would have been better served if this was something that continued to happen. You know, people keep breaking in because of the nostalgia of it. That's why they need a security guard.
Yes.
They have to figure out why people keep disappearing from this place.
Right. And help me out. So these are little kids that were murdered, killing? Why do they want to do that? Are they under the control of the serial killer and have no free will? Are they mad that they're dead and want other people dead? Are they mad that this is their playground and these people are vandalizing it? I just need a little something. I'm not asking for a speech. This movie is 40 minutes in. But something to clarify would be nice.
Yeah, we're going to get the impression later on they do want to kill Mike, or they're at least standoffish with Mike. They don't like Mike the way they're going to like Abby or something. And so why they're homicidal children is unexplained, and maybe that goes back to the source material, which was pretty thin.
I agree. You won't find answers, at least I didn't, in the next three nights, because we're up to night three, and because the babysitter was one of the people killed, there's no one to watch Abby, and now Mike has to bring his sister to work. This would be the first time that they realize he has a little girl that they would want. So why they've already targeted him and tempted him and slashed him up. We had that Elm Street moment of the kid that's the Foxy. You know, he's got a hook. And night two, he slashed him. And that led to a real, actual scar on his hand when he woke up. Why? Were they just going to kill him? Now they have a reason to negotiate, is the way I'll frame it. Now they realize that he has a sister that they want to play with and turn into an animatronic too.
I mean, they're lonely. I mean, there's five of them. They have each other. Like, what is one more going to do? Like, what's special about Abby? Does it matter that she's related to Garrett?
Yeah. Or talks to imaginary friends. Like, because it's almost like she can hear the ghost because she's been talking to people that aren't there. I don't know. Does she have The Shining? This is what you want to clarify in your final draft of the real screenplay you're shooting. But yeah, the night ends basically with her having best friends and wanting to come back every night. She's finally socializing, but with the ghosts of dead children. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but Mike's worried because the picture she's now drawing has the kids he sees in the dream. He knows that her visions are his visions, and it's all connected to Freddy's.
They really quickly get past the whole thing of the ghosts are in the animatronics, right? I mean, Mike sees the drawing. Mike decides these are ghosts. He just sits down with Abby and he's like, so they are, and she's, ghosts? Yeah, they're ghosts.
Yeah. Shrug, you know.
Man, they really rush to demystify any horror elements they have here, right? Like, we just got a scene of these animatronics murdering people, and now they're building a fort.
Yes. Tone. How should we feel about it? I feel like this director wants to make the enemy remain the child abductor, the yellow rabbit. What we will be told, and they keep cutting to this image, they have a wall of all these crayon drawings. There's only one picture of Yellow Rabbit. But Yellow Rabbit is the actual villain that started all of this, who abducted all five children, and that's depicted in that drawing, but it looks wholesome. They're all in a daisy chain, they're all smiling. It's not how it really happened. And so the blonde kid, who I think is Chica, the only one that really talks, is telling both Mike and her that he doesn't want to talk about the abductor. He only wants to talk about the Yellow Rabbit. He doesn't want to talk to Mike. They all cut him up. But they will talk to Abby. So Mike is going to continue to bring his sister to work so that she can find out what happens to Garrett. By the way, she never does.
Nope.
And this is night four is also where Vanessa just decides to come over too, because why would she do police work when she can, yeah, build a fort to Alaska's connected?
If she was a good cop, she'd have turned in her dad. Let's just start right there. Her dad is a serial killer.
Yes.
She is a police officer. She is not part of her dad's plan or anything. I know what you've said earlier, he does say, if he got too close, kill him. But I don't get the impression that she's a serial killer or that she is in on her dad's hobbies. And so if she were a good cop, she would start by turning in her dad and then worry about if she needs to patrol the neighborhood.
What I saw her do is when Mike tells her his story, she threw away his pills and says, stop sleeping on the job. And that's not just because she has a strong work ethic. It's because as long as he sleeps on the job, he will see the children that are murdered. To me, that's her trying to protect her dad and have those ghost children. She doesn't want to see that balance upset. And so I guess I do see collaboration there. Thinly veiled. I mean, it's hard to really link it, but I think she's a bad guy, but she has a change of heart night four because Abby gets electrocuted. She runs up on stage and Bonnie's strumming the electric guitar and she gets shocked. And all of a sudden she's like, don't bring your kid here anymore. You're a bad parent. And look, there's this other doll that if you put your hand in, the rib cage will snap and you'll lose a limb.
Let's not gloss over when you say that Bonnie is strumming. They're playing the romantics secrets that you keep while you're talking in your sleep. And I wonder, is this going to be the next running up that hill like Stranger Things? Are we going to have a romantics resurgence?
They only had two hits. What I Like About You and this one. And so, yes, they could use this. They're getting a big bump from Freddy's, I imagine. They're going to go on State Fair tour next summer on the backs of this one.
You know, once again, with Vanessa, I feel like half-baked idea here. For a little while there, it felt like she could be being set up as the big bad villain, right?
We're pointing towards her. Yeah, I think we're supposed to think she's the yellow rabbit. She has yellow hair.
Right, but then they let her off the hook of that well before the big reveal. So it's just like, okay, so that wasn't really a mystery. It was just something they toyed with for a little bit and then moved on.
Lack of commitment all around. Lack of commitment to their jobs. The screenwriter's not sure where to go. And again, is this a horror? Is this a comedy? I think more times than not, it's just drama. The weird thing is I just feel like it's neither funny nor scary. And it's just this kind of drama about a guy with anxiety disorder having these nightmares and, you know, wanting to process childhood trauma. Why is he holding on to Abby? They keep saying that she draws him in the picture. She's attached to him. I don't feel like the two actors have a lot of closeness. Is that me? I mean, did I miss something? Like, I don't love seeing them together.
No, I don't get it either. I don't quite understand the relationship there. I would understand it if it was made out that he lost Garrett, so he's holding on to Abby, and you can kind of infer that. But really, I think what we're supposed to get from this is he's neglectful of Abby.
Yes.
Because he's still focused on Garrett. And that at the end of the movie, he's able to let go of Garrett. Because these children are like, what would you give in order to find out about your brother? And Mike says anything. And then the next night, the children are like, we want Abby. And he agrees. He's like, okay, you can have Abby. So he's neglectful of Abby because he's focused on Garrett. And I think the character arc is supposed to come through that he lets go of Garrett. And that's why the fact that this Garrett plot is completely unresolved is okay. And he starts to appreciate the family he has and not the family he lost. But it's very poorly told. It's there in sketches. It's kind of like one of Abby's drawings. You wouldn't publish it, but you can get the picture that she's trying to get.
Well, yeah, screenwriting tip 101. If you're going to have that character turn, it can't be in the same moment. What we see is he goes back to Freddy's during the day. He goes back to the pharmacy, gets the pills again, falls asleep when he's supposed to be home sleeping. And they have this negotiation where they're like, you can dream you're at the Nebraska family retreat forever. And Garrett will be there. And it'll always be this regressed happy state. And all you got to give up is Abby. And he says yes. And then he says no. And we do not know why he changes his mind. That has to be two different moments. You can't have a character waffle like that.
His turn was immediate and in a dream. It's like, I'm sorry, dreams aren't contractually obligations.
He touches Garrett's face. He turns into Abby. And then he goes, oh, I can't do that. Why? Why? Because this movie needs it to happen. We're at night five. It's time to get this thing over with.
I know. It felt like I spent five nights at Freddy's and I only spent one night watching this movie.
I'll be honest. It was 2 o'clock in the afternoon and I was really having trouble staying awake at this point. I was like falling asleep. If it were not for the enthusiasm of the person behind me, he was shouting loudly. And so that would wake me up. But yes, what has happened is Freddy has come for, we get one more kill here, sort of off screen. Aunt Jane is babysitting Abby and Freddy comes for her and passes it off like she's just taking a nap when they get into a taxi and go back to the restaurant.
So also, though, this raises questions that I know we're not going to get answers to, but also just serves in making this more confusing is, so these animatronics aren't tied to the restaurant. They can leave if they want, right? Freddy goes all the way to their house and then takes a cab back.
Right. Why not just come and get her? Why do they need Mike at all? Because at one point they throw Mike into the chair. They're going to turn him into a Freddy? Or something?
Or is that just a kill device? Like, we don't know. We didn't see it go through. Like, it happened to the original security guard. Never see him walking around.
That really does feel like a last-minute add-on of, like, we need to do something for the horror audience in this movie. And so we have a chair where they turn you into an animatronic.
Or just shave your face off. We're not sure.
Yeah, right. Yeah, just carve your face with those gears. But yeah, he ends up getting a little bit cut, but getting away. And this is where Vanessa has her big confession. Apparently she found him bleeding on the road, takes him to some place to clean him up. Again, hand wavy in where we are and why it's happening. But she will finally show the picture of her as a child playing with Garrett's plane and her dad in the yellow bunny outfit. She is the product of the serial killer that was protected as other children disappeared. Now, her name is Vanessa Shelley. It is neither Afton nor Raglan. Is there anything that can be said about that? How they're able to disguise that? She's married to someone we didn't meet.
Or is she really his daughter? Is she just another kidnapped victim with false memories?
Mother's maiden name?
Well, yeah, if she were against him, you would think she would distance herself from that. But nobody knows, one, that he is a serial killer. And two, she has admitted in this moment that she was trying to do things to keep Mike off the trail.
And she pulls Mike into what they say in a dropped line of a police outpost first aid center?
Yes. That's what I'm saying. Where are we? What is this?
Stop it. You're in a different back room on the same set as Freddy's.
Yes. Yeah, it's painful. But this is where they taser up. She can't go and face her father, but she can give him a taser and a cow prod. Are these weapons in the game? Again, this gives you the impression that this game is about taking out animatronic beasts, but does that happen?
Yeah, there's a taser in the game. As we get more into the advanced games, there's more of it.
Okay. I mean, you figure it would be. I mean, it's logical that you would be fighting these creatures and not just sitting in a chair and opening and closing doors. There's no movie in that. But yeah, okay. So yeah, basically, Mike busts in here. We see him taser some animatronics and he stops Chica before she throws Abby into that. I guess it's an older model. It looks like a rag doll or something, but it has metal insides. And if she had been put into that, then she would have been killed / turned into a possessed animatronic as well. Not featured in any of the restaurant's literature or posters or games or anything.
Yeah, lesser known character apparently. But yeah, earlier when Mike was looking at that, it almost looked like there was a decomposing corpse inside of there already.
Mm-hmm. Well, there were, because I think he does find some of the bodies of the vandals. You know, some of the people are dead within the doll parts. There's also body parts.
Yeah, I don't think we ever see the dead children. We just see the dead vandals.
Yeah, that's weird, too, because, again, we're told this is Vanessa's thing, and it's not just their souls in those things. The reason why the bodies of the kidnapped kids were never found was the cops never looked inside the suits, so I mean, that leads one to want to see that, right? At some point, we need to see the suit without the fur and a child operating it.
This is PG-13, though.
You can do that in PG-13. Tim Burton could definitely have designed that and made it very PG-13.
And I don't think the kids are in there, like, moving. I think it's just a bag of bones in there, and it's their spirits controlling.
Yeah, let us see that. Again, what a fun challenge for a designer, for a visual storyteller to come up with. If that's what you're telling us, don't have it be words, show us. I do like the ball pit. I mean, that was the one thing I feel like it's totally underutilized here, but you always had those ball pits. They're smelly. They ended up having to get rid of them at our restaurant because just unsanitary, quite frankly, but the chase of Abby ends up her hiding in that ball pit and Foxy almost getting her there. They should have done more with that.
I agree. I loved the shot of the eyeball through the ball pit, the holes between the balls. I love that shot. It was honestly the best visual of the whole movie. But this is when the yellow rabbit's going to come in, finally.
Again, very Scooby-Doo. The helmet comes off. Steve Raglan, William Afton, Matthew Lillard, whatever you want to call him. There he is.
I should have known. Because there's a moment. The rabbit stabs Vanessa before he's unmasked. And then when he pulls out the knife, he does this maneuver where he takes two fingers and cleans the blade in a sliding motion. And I'm like, that's the motion from Scream. That's Ghostface's signature move, is cleaning the blade like that. Why are they referencing Scream? It's a tell that it's Matthew Lillard one of the killers from Scream doing this by doing the ghost face motion he did in Scream.
Well, it doesn't have the fun of Scream. The reason why you may not have totally tracked that or seen that as the gimme that it is because this movie isn't postmodern and clever and winking in that way, or at least it doesn't come off that way to me. It's far too sedentary and poker face, serious about what's happening.
It's also because they're merging two characters, because there is, as I mentioned, answering machine guy who calls and gives you the layout of the security guard gig, and that's kind of what Matthew Lillard had been playing as Steve Raglan, but now he's also William Afton, so they've taken that role and merged it, and that lulled me into a sense of security that they'd just given Matthew Lillard the answering machine guy role.
Well, and also just from what's going on screen standpoint, who else could it be? There's no more characters left. It's either him or the lawyer.
Right. There wasn't that many people in the entire cast. They're all dead at this point or been injured. So yes, if this is a mystery, if it's not just some rando, then yeah, I guess it could have been Garrett, right? That was the one thing.
Yeah, I was just about to say Garrett would be under that mask and carrying on the murders of William Afton. That would make sense.
Yeah, Garrett or their father. Because the father is said to have just couldn't have handled it, right? Disappeared and never said a word in any of the dreams. Like, the mom talked, the dad never said anything. So I thought maybe that would have been a good, but nope, it's Matt Lillard.
So, like, did he put on the yellow bunny suit and then go out into the Nebraska woods? And people thought he was just a real rabbit and didn't notice him grabbing children from campfires?
I don't think he was in the bunny suits in Nebraska.
Yeah, shame on Mike if he doesn't remember that. I know you couldn't remember his face, but you'd remember a yellow bunny suit, right?
Yeah, in his dreams, it's always a hooded character that he sees the back of his head.
All right. Anyway, what does it matter? In the end, yes, he's killed everyone. He's gotten Abby, I guess. Is that what he wanted? I'm not even sure what he wanted. He's about to kill Mike. He wanted that. I killed your brother, and now I'm going to kill you. I heard some dialogue to that. And then the plan is, help me out with this, Abby really quickly draws the truth, takes down the crayon drawing of Yellow Rabbit holding hands with the five kids, and shows Yellow Rabbit stabbing the five kids, and now the ghost and the animatronics are ready to kill him.
Yeah, they want revenge for being murdered by him.
They don't remember that because of a crayon drawing.
Yes, and they trust Abby implicitly.
Woo! I mean, I don't need to say any more, right? That's rank. And so the climax of this movie is, rather than fight or kill or anything like that, turn on the spotlight on her drawing, and the other animatronics drag him away. Well, Cupcake does get a bite in. I guess Cupcake bites into his side and kind of makes the gears crushes innards or something, and that's it for Matthew Lillard.
So he's in one of those machine type of things too, but obviously his is different because he doesn't have like articulated elbows and stuff.
Yeah. Why would he wear an animatronic suit?
Right. Why would he wear one with the trap inside?
Right. Yeah. Really dumb. And the others get away that, yeah, Mike is going to take Vanessa to the hospital. She'll live on presumably for the sequel. She's in a coma, and Abby returns to her school and is now social, can build Legos with other girls, and the school counselor is pleased with how he's parenting.
And presumably there's a police investigation and a funeral for the aunt that was killed on their living room floor. I mean...
Or maybe not, you know, maybe they just throw her in a suit. I don't know.
And, yeah, police investigating why Vanessa was stabbed and in a coma, and...
Look, all we know is that blonde boy that I think is Chica has an opportunity, that Yellow Rabbit is bleeding out in the kitchen, and he's reaching his hand out, and the kid closes the door on him, presumably implying, at least I think in the director's interpretation, these abused children will not be abused by him anymore. But maybe someone else will come find me, because that's, if you get all the way to the end of the credits, there's some speak and spell voice that spells come find me out. Nobody in the theater knew what it was spelling. I had to run home to Peacock and thank you captions.
Yes, I had to use closed captions. I figured I needed to figure out what that was saying. This is a reference to the puppet from one of the later games, so I'm sure we'll be seeing that in the sequel.
And I think this balloon thing that's been popping up throughout the movie was also in the game. It makes a mid-credit stinger with the taxi driver, where he gets a, I guess he's going to chauffeur, I don't know, some doll that is holding balloons.
Yep, that is yet another one of the animatronics.
I don't think any kid could fit inside that.
I'm pretty sure it's bigger in the games, but not 100%. And speaking of 100%, Justin, Stewart, do you 100% recommend Five Nights at Freddy's? Justin.
So I don't know if it's still going on, but I know during the height of the pandemic when everybody was getting food delivered from Grubhub and DoorDash and whatnot, you could order pizza from a fancy restaurant called Pescelli's. And what it ended up being was Chuck E. Cheese. Chuck E. Cheese changed their name to Pescelli's Pizzeria and was selling their crappy pizza for delivery.
I did not know this. That's hilarious. Because I know what's in that pizza. I've made it.
Right. I mean, ultimate bait and switch. Nobody goes to Chuck E. Cheese for the food, right? It's because you're going to go play in the ball pit and arcade.
Go to get some illegal drugs, must, but do not get anything else from those cooks.
Well, I kind of feel like the same bait and switch was kind of pulled here, right? Like, I'm aware of Five Nights at Freddy's. I could draw you what they look like before going into this. And having kids that are into it, I knew it was them being into the aesthetic of this because the idea is something that's relatable. Like, even as a kid who grew up in the 80s with showbiz and Chuck E. Cheese, that was nightmare fuel back then. Imagine a few decades of neglect and rot on top of that. It's extra scary. So yeah, it's a great premise. But I gotta tell you, I feel bad for Five Nights at Freddy fans who went and saw this movie, and now they either have to pretend to have liked it, or they're going to be very disappointed, because you guys deserve better. This is a cool franchise with a cool look, and it can be done better. And this movie had bits and pieces of better ideas, it just didn't follow any of them fully. It took a little bit here, a little bit there, and just kind of threw it at you. So maybe, I'm pretty sure we're going to get a sequel. The box office is doing good, and they sold it to Peacock and made their money back just there. So they're in the black here. You know, they're going forward with the part two, I'm pretty sure. Let's hope it gets into some better hands. Let's hope it gets into somebody who knows how to either make this a good horror movie or a good suspense movie or a good whodunit. But this one tried to do all those things and didn't do any of them particularly well. Outside of the look of the movie and capturing the feel of it, yeah, good job. A plus on the look and feel. Story, Pescelli's pizza all the way. So yeah, this is unfortunately not recommend for me. I wanted to enjoy this, but it just was a yawner.
Stuart.
Yeah, you know, this is the video game retrospective. We've been in the arcade, very few green arrows. I came to this knowing it's quite possible I wasn't going to like it. I never would have dreamed in my wildest imaginations it was going to be so boring and self-serious. That's the shocker. I can't believe I didn't get some chuckles out of this thing. I mean, I was, again, fought to stay awake. I call this 40 winks at Freddy's because I was really struggling to stay awake. It is not frightening and it is not funny. And I can't believe they missed that mark. It's such an obvious target. But the skee ball doesn't even go near the machine. It like broke the window and flew down the street and did not go into the target at all. But don't take my word for it. As you say, the fans, I was there with the super fan, and I will just end my review by quoting verbatim what he said. What a meh movie. I can't believe I waited 8 years for this meh movie. It had some cool callbacks, but where were the robots? I think they cut a lot of stuff out so kids could watch this. I bet there's a better movie on the editing room floor. Not recommend.
And you know what? I had a great, great time watching animatronic puppets go murderous on a night employee. Just a strong recommend for Willy's Wonderland.
Okay, I'm like, I know you're not talking about this movie.
A movie that should probably be sued for ripping off Five Nights at Freddy's. Shamelessly.
I wish I had watched that.
A Nicolas Cage film where he's a night janitor at an old restaurant with murderous puppets that come into life and are trying to kill him, and then some townies are breaking in because they know of these murderous animatronics. It is so much fun. And my wife and I watched that and loved Willy's Wonderland. Nick Cage is at his cagiest. I'll just spoil this. He doesn't say a word. Nick Cage, if you ever see him in interviews, talks about how he loves channeling silent film actors. If you listen to our review of Vampire's Kiss, he went over the top like a silent film actor, only he wasn't silent. He came into Willy's Wonderland and told the director, cut all my dialogue. I'm just not going to speak at all. I'm not going to say a single word. I'm going to be a silent actor in this film. So it's Cage at his cagiest, animatronic puppets, killing fun. Okay? It's a fun movie that Five Nights at Freddy's should probably sue because it seems like it's their concept through and through, but also that Five Nights at Freddy's should have tried to emulate.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. it did this concept so much freaking better.
Yeah, I agree. You've actually, because I want this. I still want this movie. I don't want a sequel, but I want this movie. Where was it? That's the movie I want. I guess you're telling me it's, what's it called? Willy's Wonderland?
Willy's Wonderland. Go watch Willy's Wonderland. That is my recommendation. Don't watch Five Nights at Freddy's for all the reasons that have been stated, but go watch Willy's Wonderland. I'll end this on a positive note, a film I like, which is not Five Nights at Freddy's. But you know what? It made a ton of money. We're probably going to get a sequel. Like Justin said, maybe it'll go into better hands. I'll play a couple more of the games when the sequel comes out and see if I can get more into it. That first one, I would have rather slept for five nights than played the game Five Nights at Freddy's, but I'll try a couple more of the games and see if I can figure out what the fanfare is about when we get to the sequel.
And I want to just, you know, because we've thrown so much shade at this, deservedly so, keep in mind that this is the arcade. This is no Uwe Boll movie. Like, we've seen really, really terrible video game movies. This one is just, I'm just really disappointed. I'm so angry that they fucked up such a can't-lose proposition. And I do put a lot of that on this Emma Tammy, whose other works I didn't mind, but whose idea of this brooding, elevated, slow burn is just, yeah, we got to get rid of that for the sequel. You might actually save it. I might actually be able to recommend a sequel if we just have something that's fast and funny and bloody.
Yeah, I want to be clear. I don't hate this film. On my Letterboxd, I gave it 2 stars out of 5. That's a not recommend, but it's not a strong not recommend.
It's a slog, and Freddy's should be fun. It shouldn't be a slog. Well, as far as I can tell, guys, the next time we're in the arcade, it'll be next summer. Borderlands. They shot it a year ago. They've been testing it and tweaking it, and they finally have a release date. I mean, it's a big video game, right? It's got big-time actresses, 2 Oscar-winning actresses in the cast. They're dumping it in August of 2024, so not really an encouraging sign there.
It's another one that I think is built around an aesthetic that's popular, so hey, we'll see what they do with it.
Right now, we're thinking about Marvel again, because we have The Marvels coming out in theaters next week. Tuesday, we're going to cover the Disney Plus show Secret Invasion, which is kind of a build-up to that new movie.
Yep, it is not gotten the greatest fan response, so I haven't watched it. I'll be honest, I have not watched it when it came out. I'll be watching it for the first time for that review. I'm looking forward to watching it. I mean, Sam Jackson and Maria Hill, and see who else comes back, what other surprises may be in store. And then the week after, The Marvels, which Stuart and I are having a little side bet. Will it open bigger than Five Nights at Freddy's? Even if it's at Five Nights at Freddy's, that is a very disappointing opening for a Marvel movie.
Yeah. I just don't know what I should be excited about. It's like this Karen that's like throwing a fit and the Marvels have to beat her up or something. I just can't tell what's so epic about this. Why is this in a movie theater?
The only thing that the trailers have really sold me on is how much I like and how overused Beastie Boys Intergalactic is.
It's also one of these movies that requires home viewing, right? Because 2 of the characters are introduced in Disney Plus series.
It is a sequel to 7 Marvel properties, if you
what?
Listen to Kevin Feige talk. I mean, it's a sequel to Captain Marvel. It's a sequel to Avengers Endgame. It's a sequel to WandaVision. It's a sequel to Ms. Marvel, the TV series. It's a sequel to Secret Invasion.
Okay, so I should expect more confusion and randomness that I've had here at Freddy's as they try to address 7 other projects. Yeesh, what a mess.
But then, Justin, you're going to be joining us again on Friday for our Home Alone retrospective series. You know what? People are saying it's a little early for us to be discussing Christmas. I'm sorry, I watched the news on Friday and saw no less than 3 Christmas ads. It's not even Halloween yet, and I saw 3 Christmas ads. I figure if it's good enough for Walmart and whoever else was playing those ads, it's good enough for Now Playing to start with our silver donation drive, the 6 Home Alone films, which we will be finishing up at Christmas, but we have to start now to get them all in.
And yeah, now that we're through, October ends today, so yes, it's fair game. At this point, you can definitely play your Christmas movies, and this will be the last one with Macaulay Culkin, and the first and only one with Donald Trump.
Our first Home Alone review went out to Silver Level patrons and donors last Friday. Thank you to everyone who supported us. A $10 donation or a $10 a month pledge on our Patreon or Podbean site, and you get to hear all of the Home Alone reviews. You can find the details at nowplayingpodcast.com/donate. And to follow up on the Home Alone review, since it was the three of us, we've gotten some questions. We kind of dissed John Candy's career. People are saying, what about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles? I'll go on the record. I love Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
I haven't seen it since 1988.
Oh, and if we gave the impression that we didn't like John Candy, I'll...
Yeah, I don't remember that even being the lead of the story. He did make a lot of bad films, but I believe we were highly complimentary about the actor.
Yeah, I loved him. Loved him in everything. He was in Stripes. That was awesome. And Planes, Trains.
Splash.
Yeah.
Love John Candy as a person. Got so drunk the night he died because I was sad. They showed Blues Brothers and I chugged a beer every time he had a scene in Blues Brothers and I got blitzed. So yeah, fans of John Candy. And were we fans of Home Alone? If you donate $10 or more, you can find out. nowplayingpodcast.com/donate. Spoiler alert, we're kinder to Home Alone than we are to most video game movies. So Justin, Stewart, thank you for playing with me. Until next time, game over.
Hopefully.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Now Playing Podcast. We hope you've enjoyed the show.
I had a lot of fun tonight. Thank you for playing with me.
Come back to nowplayingpodcast.com each week for another new movie review podcast.
There's a larger conversation that needs to happen here.
And in the NowPlayingPodcast.com archives, you can find reviews of other video game movies, including Resident Evil, Max Payne, The Wizard, King of Fighters, Angry Birds, Assassin's Creed, Need for Speed, Postal, Silent Hill, Tekken, Pokemon, Sonic the Hedgehog, House of the Dead, Ratchet & Clank, Blood Rain, In the Name of the King, Gran Turismo, Hitman, Dead Trigger, Far Cry, DOA, Dead or Alive, Dungeon Siege, and more.
We're going to have so much fun together.
Also at our site, you can find hundreds of other movie reviews, including Star Wars, A Nightmare on Elm Street, Independence Day, the Avengers films, Back to the Future, Batman, Superman, The Fast and the Furious, and more.
You can have this dream every night.
Do you want to continue? Insert money now to keep playing Now Playing.
Hey, by the way, I do intend on paying you eventually.
Now Playing Podcast is a show without any sponsors or ads. We rely on support from listeners like you to keep Now Playing operating.
If we show you, what will you give us?
Anything. I'll give you anything you want.
You can also join the Now Playing Patron campaign. Patrons of $10 or more get a new exclusive movie review every month, plus even more perks, including one where you can pick a movie for our hosts to review. Find the details on our website,
I would really appreciate that.
Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho.
Do you also know that your eyes are bloodshot and your heart rate's through the roof?
Associate produced by Jason Latham.
Mr. I can't work nights.
Now Playing is edited by Santiago and Arnie.
How's the pay?
Not great, but the hours are worse.
Now Playing credits read by Brock.
Are you being paid by the word?
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with the motion pictures reviewed or otherwise referred to herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
You may have forgotten your loyalties, but I assure you, they have not.
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
I don't really see how that's any of your business.
I'm telling you, you need to let it go.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of Venganza Media Incorporated. Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2023, all rights reserved, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
It's okay, Mike. We just want to play.
Night watchman of the closed-down Freddy Fazbear's Pizzeria. Mike reluctantly takes the job.
The end. What a good movie.
He spends five nights there. Sorry, I'm having a throat issue. I'm just trying to...
Yeah.
Freddy's is an old pizza party arcade and has several animatronic mascots.
This will be the last one with Macaulay Culkin, and... the first and only one with Donald Trump.
So far.
Right. Yeah. There's that seventh one they're working on. Make Home Alone great again.
Home Arrest 7.
We might not be able to use that joke.
Our first Home Alone review went out to Silver Level patrons and donors last Friday.